the show that goes there. This is the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show all the way from the Isle of Maui. Aloha and welcome. Today, we have got a lot of stuff to cover, and including, well, Donald Trump has been at it again as far as how he portrays something in the media versus what we all know is real. We'll talk about that, the Chuck Todd interview, a little bit about Kellyanne, and the latest of the investigations going on behind what currently is our government. Isn't it great to live in a country that is so problem-free? Hi, welcome to the program. My name is Shaggy Jenkins. I'm a critical thinker, a problem solver, guy just left of normal and sane and always centered in common sense, found at my website at shaggyjenkins.com or on social media at Shaggy Live. We begin today with Donald Trump, once again, being accused of some sort of sexual malfeasance. And in this case, it's going to be kind of an interesting story with the whole R word. I'll get to that in just a sec. But Trump seems to be, once again, using the same old tired defense that he always uses when it comes to defending himself against allegations of sexual assault. This time, it comes from an author, E. Jean. Well, you probably know her from an advice column that she writes. The thing is back a long time ago in the mid-1990s, she encountered Donald Trump within a retail store. Now, a certain amount of activity happened that the law would constitute as rape, but that's where we get a little bit sketchy on that word. You see, because even Ms. Carroll does not believe, at least she did not at that time, and that's why she didn't report it for the longest time, that it was rape. If you watched or heard her on Anderson Cooper yesterday, she actually said, I thought that was a fight that I had won because I had gotten away from him. The thing was, though, is it most certainly was some very rape-like activity between Donald Trump and, well, E. Jean Carroll somewhere in the mid-1990s. Now, the reason this story is so important is because Donald Trump always, when it comes to sexual allegations against him, plays it off the exact same way. So I'm going to give you about 3 seconds here. Guess what his defense was? If you said that he thought that she was ugly, unattractive, and not his type, then ding, 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 you're absolutely correct. Like, that has anything to do with anything. But when asked about it, Donald Trump said, and I quote here, quote, I'll say it with great respect. Really? Okay, no, that was me. Okay. I'll say it with great respect. Number one, she's not my type. She's not my type. She's unattractive to me. There's no way that I would touch this woman. Ooh. Now, if you get me a pretty enough woman and she wants to accuse me of rape, I'll gladly volunteer for that. As long as she fits the physical guidelines of somebody that I, Donald Trump, would like to rape. That's what it seems like he's saying there. Because the second thing he says is a number two, it never happened. It never happened. So, there's our president's quote on it. And I hate to bring this up, but he's used this before. Time and time again, in fact, anytime a woman that has come forward and alleged that the president has engaged in some sort of sexual assault, it's always that she's unattractive. And being unattractive means that there is no way that I, Donald Trump, would sexually assault her. I have to reiterate the reason I am saying it like this. Is because if you look at what he's saying, he's actually saying if a woman is pretty enough, he would rape them. If a woman was attractive up to his standards, he would forcibly kiss them, grope them in public. All of the things that he has denied doing for other women, saying, I would never do that because A, she's ugly, B, she's not my type, yada, yada, yada. Every time he comes out and he says something like that, you have to take the logical meaning of that sentence. In other words, if I wouldn't do it under these circumstances, what is the inverse? I would do it under thee. And Donald Trump, time and time and time again, has seemed to endorse, and I this is no small stretch of the imagination, has seemed to endorse time and time again in national interviews, and even when he's doing his rallies, sexual assault against the attractive women, but only the attractive women. And if you have any sort of sexual encounter with somebody that's maybe just a little outside of your norm, you can come forward and your patent defense is, why, how dare you think that I would sleep with this woman? How dare you think I would sexually assault this woman? She is clearly not my type. And I am sure in every sexual assault case that has ever made it in front of a jury, they went back there and it was a quick deliberation when the foreman stood up and said, yeah, well, you heard the guy. It's not her type. So wing dang doodle. He's not guilty. Let's get him out of here. Come on. Justice is served. And I know that you're probably right now scratching your head going, why are we going down this path, Shaggy? Because a lot of time when we talk about femininity in the United States, there are certain things that are allowed to be done to you if you meet a certain beauty standard. And in Donald Trump's world, you can be attractive enough for rape. You can reach a plateau of beauty that would basically mean sexual assault is coming your way. And every single time that he has come forward and he's made statements against a woman's appearance versus the actual allegations that they bring forward against him. And I know what you're thinking, but no, Shaggy, that's exactly what he's doing. These women came forward, said the president raped me. President comes back and says, nope, I couldn't rape them. They ugly. You know how I am. That's a defense, right? An actual defense would be like saying that at that time, I was not aware that these events were transcribing in her head, that my perceptions were wrong. That's the what we like to call the Enzi's Azaria defense, two different perception of the same situation. You could also go the route of, you know what? I was drunk. That's what we like to call the senator defense. Because what senator hasn't talked his way out of sexual assault somewhere in our history by saying, I had a few too many and she just looked appetizing? It's the beauty thing. You can be attractive enough in these guys' mind to be rapeable. And every time the president comes out and he says something along the lines of, she's not attractive enough to rape, that means that vis-a-vis, there is someone who does exist at that level of beauty. Now, the big troubling thing, though, is that Donald Trump always equates physical appearance, looks, to credibility. Now, he's done this with, well, every political enemy he's ever had. The latest, of course, is him reviving. Oh, boy, we were looking forward to this since 2015. Reviving the whole Sleepy Joe adage that he's trying to use to strike down Biden's reputation. This is something that works for Donald Trump. It's polarizing. It's attention grabbing. But when it comes to talking about female candidates, he talks about their look. Like that's the value system that we evaluate people on. And he takes it a dangerous step further by saying, you know what? Not only do their looks, you know, determine their wealth in society or determine their value in society, but their looks can actually determine whether or not a sexual assault could possibly be had against them. So if you're just like kind of an average looking woman and you get raped in Donald Trump's world, guess what? That didn't happen because clearly you're not attractive enough to elicit that type of behavior. And with these latest allegations and with the book coming out and all of that stuff right around the time that the investigations are heating up in D.C., Donald Trump has definitely hoping to sidestep this as easily as he did the Karen McDougal crisis, the Stormy Daniels crisis, you know, all the other women that have came forward and said that he's either engaged in prostitution with them or sexual assault. Every single time that he needs a go-to defense, it is they are unattractive, therefore, vis-a-vis, they are incredulous. They have no credibility. They cannot have any credibility because look at them and look at me. Look at the type of virile man that I am. How would I engage in? And this is the thing. It really says something about our country where a president, this president, who has had multiple allegations of sexual assault against him, who has had multiple women come forward and admit some very terrible behavior from Donald Trump, co-workers and people that used to go around with him during the pageants telling you about how he would walk into rooms unannounced so he could catch women topless. All of these things add up to a very simple pattern. This president is so scandalous that right now he is making a story that should be huge in the news, very small. And you're probably wondering, where are you going with this, Shaggy? Okay, think about this. Any other president, okay? I'm not going to go do the whole thing that most show hosts do. Oh, it's Barack versus Trump. No. I'm going to throw it down and say, any president going all the way back to Washington himself, okay? I almost called him Washington, D.C. himself. No. Before he was a city, he was a man by the name of George. But if you look at all of those presidents, okay, imagine at any point in their political careers, in their public service life, had one story, like the latest, Donald Trump raping a woman in the middle of a department store in the mid-1990s. Imagine one story like that coming out against any other president in history. Now, I know what you're thinking, but there was different. The social norms and things like that to consider, Shaggy. I mean, the first president might not have even raised an eyebrow at it and said, so what? Rape happens. Welcome to the colonies. Okay. I get what you're saying. But what I'm saying is, had any other president or presidential candidate attracted the type of story that Donald Trump has attracted around him, they would not have political career. For that, look no further than the popular Broadway play, Hamilton. Basically, the story of a guy whose fleshy little dalliances led to an end of his political career. It was so unusual that he was having this affair that, oh my God, it ended his public service permanently. And yet Donald Trump, time and time and time again, has had allegations brought up against him by credible women that don't even seem to register on most people's radars. And this latest allegation, which let's just be honest, not going to be the last, but this latest allegation that comes forward is not getting as much headlines as other stuff in the news. And you kind of wonder if this says something about us as a country. Ever since the Me Too movement, everybody has always said, oh, I'm an ally. I'm going to be a supportive person if a woman ever comes forward and has some sort of threatening or sexually assaulty type behavior done against her. I'm going to be a strong ally. Well, ask yourself this question. Why is it in the wake of the Me Too, which was supposed to make us woke AF, all of us, why is it that stories about the president and sexual assault and rape seem to be barely headline news? Like, as a matter of fact, if you're looking for information about this whole latest accusation, which is, oh my God, intense, if you're looking for any information about it, don't go looking at your front page headlines because that is not there. It says a lot about this country when the most paper space, or the most head space that we can give a story about our president sexually assaulting yet another woman in his past, it seems that when it comes to that headspace, none of us are as comfortable with it as we are with the other various thousands upon thousands of scandals that the Trump White House create. It's going to seem like a weird statement that I'm making here, but consider this. Donald Trump stirs the pot so rapidly with so much fecal matter in it at a pace that is so exhausting. A lot of the times, the news just tries to chase the latest, most sensational thing. Not really doing a lot of exploration or deep diving into these stories. It's just, ooh, something salacious happened with the president's social media. Let's get on it. And away they go. And time again, stories like this, they get skipped over. They get brushed to the side because in our culture, in the United States, we have a problem. The same problem that Donald Trump had. That is, beauty equals credibility. You see, I hate to say this, but because these are older, more established women, not young, hot to trot thoughts in the nightclub, since they are not that, when they come forward and they talk about sexual assault and things like that, we as a society are just like, whatever. We basically say, no, it couldn't have happened to you. There's a certain look of people that this stuff happens to, and since you don't fit that look, we're going to be dismissive of your claims against the United States president. Or against a high-ranking member, or just some random white guy that has his whole life in front of him, according to some judge. Time and time again, we use beauty as credibility. And the other thing is, too, is that Donald Trump's comments also point out the whole problem with toxic male culture in this country. Beauty equals an excuse for bad or aberrant behavior leading up to sexual assault and rape. You can grope them. You can fawn all over them. Hell, you could rape them if they're pretty enough. In these guys' eyes, women's bodies and women's beauties is the barometer of their character. If a woman comes around and, oh my God, she looks so good, I must be excused for all my actions, that's not a problem with her looks. That's a problem with you and your action. But guys like Trump and stories like this one illustrate in this country we have a fundamental bias against women, against victims, if they don't match a certain look. And if you do match a certain look, we are allowed in this country, and think back, how many times have I covered on this show, stories of women that go to court over rape and the judge throws the case out saying, look at what you were wearing. Of course, you know you deserved it. You led my client on with your womanly ways, so much so that his man logic was shut down. So no, get out of my courtroom, you Jezebel. How many times does that happen? Way too many. How many times should it logically happen? That number is a big fat zero. But Donald Trump reinforces that with his public comments against his own sexual accuser. And now it's catching on. Whereas when other guys are in trouble, they too elicit the, she's not my type. Let me tell you something if you're a guy. Is she in fact a human? Congratulations, that's your type, human. The rest of that stuff you put on there are what's called societal pressures about a beauty standard. That is a very double standard because women, we aspire them to hold up looking timeless forever, and guys, we applaud when they age. And Donald Trump knows that about our country, believe it or not, and that's why he plays up that defense. I am an older guy who, in this country, the older I get, just the more fatherly and attractive I become. Don't laugh. That is actual science. Men are allowed to age in the public eye in America. But if it's a woman, nah. And if something happened in her past, we just as easily say, well, because she's unattractive now, we can't believe her claims then. And if she wants to go back and prove those claims, well, you know, who's to say that we're even going to believe that she was that attractive back then? Ouch, first off. And second, that's a fundamental problem. In this country, we only allow credibility to the attractive. I'm not trying to make this into a joke. When it comes to a court of law, when it comes to sexual assault, those two worlds collide. Attractiveness can mean the difference between conviction and non-conviction. If you're too attractive and you show up to court, the judge might just take one look at you and be like, well, of course, I'd rape you too. Whoa! That was actually said in a court trial once, yeah. I could see why he would want to rape you. But this is the things that we do. And right now, Donald Trump is really in trouble with women. Not just, you know, the women he sexually assaulted. No, he's in trouble with a lot of women. It looks like the voting pool of GOP women, at least when polled asking if they were going to go ahead and support Donald Trump for 2020, he's lost a lot of his support. A lot of. From 40-something percent in the 2016 has now dropped to 30-something percent and lowering the closer that we get and the further that the election, well, the investigation stretch. Will Congress add this to their investigation plate? I think they've got a lot going on right now. Too much to take up this call. But we, the citizenry of the United States, should really take this whole big presidency as a lesson about how we have allowed rape culture to permeate men in this country. And we've excused it when they were older men of power. Or if we think that they're morally right on something else. Oh, he's morally right. So the fact that he went and blew all of his money on hookers, that doesn't mean anything, does it? Every televangelist I remember from my youth. The fact of the matter is that with the latest allegations against Trump and the conditions of the United States, we have to really take a look at the absence of this latest allegation against the president on the front pages of papers across our country. If it was any other president, this would have been just a career-ending scandal. And we've had this happen in the past. Does anybody remember Gary Hart? Anybody? I'll wait. He had a boat called Monkey Business, which is exactly what he was up to on said boat with a secretary. And he was running for president. Did we ever have a president, Gary Hart? I'm not going to tell you. Go look it up. It'll be a fun time for both of us when you come back. Now, for the rest of you that already know, look, any other person would have put themselves out there. And yet, this person, Donald Trump, not only seems to survive these types of scandals, he almost thrives off of this. He almost thrives off of this image of being such a powerful man that he and only he gets to choose which kind of women that he rapes. He is not beholden to his body's whims. No, he is a strong and capable, young and virile man at 72 years old, who can control who he rapes based on his own personal standard. Now, I hate being pessimistic when it comes to this show, but I'm just going to take the side of the script from America that the women have been reading aloud for decades, and a lot of the men have been plugging their ears and going la 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 to. This type of behavior isn't just now being brought to light. It's always kind of existed. You've always been kind of crappy to women, America. Oops, you know a good way to fix that? When somebody comes forward especially somebody that has a long period of time has passed between the incident and their time, please understand that being violated physically is something that is devastating mentally. And I'm going to echo the words of a lot of experts in this whole field of study when it comes to PTSD from sexual assault. Every person has a time. It's like dynamite with those old fuses that you light. Some fuses are longer, some are shorter. But at the end, everything eventually comes out, sometimes in one big violent pop that everybody around that person in their life has to sit around and help pick up the pieces and mend. But when it comes to Donald Trump and this latest case of sexual allegation, he once again is telling men in America, hey, it's okay. If you want to do some bad behavior, just make sure they're pretty. And women in America, your physical attractiveness basically determines your credibility, even when it comes to sexual assault. And you know that you can trust me, the president, and not her, Mrs. Carroll, because, you know what? She's not that attractive anyway. I'm thinking E-Jean, he has a lot more things written down than Trump does, even with his Twitter habit, and it always sounds a lot better. But when it comes to sexual assault in America, will there be justice for women? Not now. We'll be back for more.
Get informed. This is the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network. Welcome back to it. If you missed any part of the first part of the show, dude, go by and check it out on Spotify, iHeartMedia, or anywhere your podcasting needs are served. Or, you know, some fine radio stations across this great land of ours. I've always wanted to say that with my southern voice. Hi. I am the host, Shaggy Jenkins, critical thinker, problem solver, guy just left and normal insane, at my website, ShaggyJenkins.com, or on social media, at Shaggy Live. I kind of want to take a moment here to talk not about the president and the latest allegations against him with sexual assault and stuff, but in the way that he can absolutely dominate a reporter if you let them. Okay, so over the weekend, he was on the show Meet the Press with Chuck Todd. Now, as a person that does this for my line of work, I'm going to go ahead and toss that out there. Maybe old Chuck should have prepared a little bit more knowing the subject of who he was about to interview. He did not. And a large part of the American population spent all day yesterday talking about all the multifaceted points that Chuck Todd failed on, because he wasn't prepared. However, during the interview, Trump kind of knew that Todd wasn't prepared and let fly a whole lot of inaccurate statements in such a rapid-fire way, it seemed like that Chuck couldn't come up with any solution. Now, he would throw up some softball questions. Do you think you're more successful in business? And blah, 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 blah. But for the most part, the president was like, let me tell you about the evil people in the deep state conspiracy, Mueller, the witch hunt, the Hillary. I mean, this was Trump at his Trumpiest as far as, you know, seasoned reporters from NBC. But the president has sort of the gift of being able to power over certain weak interviewers, okay? Let's not forget that for the most part, Donald Trump has spent years and years and years and years going toe-to-toe with people like Howard Stern and Barbara Walters and some of the other greater interviewers in our time. With that kind of clout, with that kind of stuff on your resume, it's very easy to take advantage of an ill-prepared reporter, and that's exactly what happened. Now, why is this a bad thing? Because, look, this is a president that knows if he can lie about one thing, he can lie about a bunch of other things really quickly. And that's the way he's always been in front of the media. I'm going to tell one little lie. You don't challenge me on it. Okay. Boom, 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 boom. Here's more lies. Deuces, I'm out. That's usually what happened. Experienced reporters, most of the times, flummox the president so much so that he will sit down to an empty desk and pretend to work. Pick up a phone and act like somebody's on it. Or that anybody will ever be on that actually wants to talk to him. He has been stonewalling people for a long time when it comes to what he deems as tough reporters. If somebody gets a little under his skin, out the door they go. But when it comes to weak reporters, there's a bigger danger. You see, anytime you have these networks in front of a viewing audience, the viewing audience basically takes the network as the credibility. So, you know, the big three, CBS, ABC, NBC, they kind of rely on the public's faith in their credibility for how their news coverage, gets accepted. And because of their credibility, that also expands out to their other programming, you know, the fictional stuff, the sitcom-y stuff, things like that. Because as a cornerstone, the American public trusts this brand. Now, when you have a guy go into a trusted brand and start spewing a bunch of untested, unverified, and let's just go ahead and say it, completely made up lies as his main content, when we allow that to happen, we are basically allowing that person to capitalize off of the credibility of the signal they're on. So Donald Trump was kind of hoping for a big softball from Chuck Todd because he knew, if I can get in front of NBC viewers, kind of in the older spectrum, these are going to be the people that are going to be your swing voters in the 2020 election. If I can get on there and basically get my truth out before I'm caught, there's a lot of people that are going to see me, the president, with a little bug in the corner that says NBC. They're going to see this other reporter, Chuck Todd, and they're going to be like, oh, that must be true. When it comes to Trump, he knows that he doesn't have reality on his side, but he can have perception on his side. Now, I kind of want to take a brief side note here and say, in the hands of Donald Trump, it's something sickeningly masterful to watch. It's almost fascinating to see how he kind of plays these questions that people give him. And he gives back nothing, and I mean absolutely nothing as an answer, well, other than a bunch of words that should sound like sentences, but when you read them on paper, absolutely, positively do not. But when it comes to his vice president, can we all agree that Mike Pence never needs to wing it? He was talking about climate change over the weekend, and when confronted with some of the stories about it, he basically went off and said, well, you know, the politics of the left is anti-business, but is the environment dying? Do you believe that we are in imminent threat? That was the question. Do you believe that we're in some sort of imminent threat? And time and time and time again, Mike Pence tried to do the Donald Trump shuffle and start ramble babbling until somebody caught on to the fact that, we probably need to move on to the next question. Or, ooh, that was something so fascinating that they said we should probably stay with them on that. Mike Pence tried to do that, and when you read the transcript, to say it wasn't pretty is giving it a lot more credit than it deserved. But Trump is a master at it, and so when he comes out and he says things, especially when he says things on networks like NBC, it does look a little credible, just slightly credible, and he's hoping that the more close that we get to the 2020 elections, the more he will be able to get on these networks that he's attacked as fake news and spread his truth. Keep in mind, his truth includes a lot of lying. Things like, is internal polls actually showing Trump ahead or behind Biden? Oh, it's behind. Well, we fire those pollsters. Does Kellyanne Conway constantly violate the Hatch Act? Does she possibly need to come in front of the House and explain not only her actions, but some of the things that she could have witnessed in the investigation? Sure. Do you think she's going to show up? Nope. That's how things work in Trump's world. If you have a big enough personality, or if you have a big enough cojones to pull it off, you can basically, as he said, run the country. But the thing that really gets you at the end of the day, as we're starting to go into the 2020 election cycle, the thing that really gets you is that Trump not only is losing credibility in areas where he had swayed a bunch of people over from the Democratic side and Barack Obama, what we like to call the backlash voters. Oh my God, he's black. Look, let's hire a white man. Now, this is the thing. With Trump being that guy, on the other side of the debate, when it comes to holding him accountable, when it comes to any of the investigations behind it, when it comes to any sort of public reputation, well, he's not looking so good these days. And that means he's lost a considerable amount of people that he wants to get in touch with. Networks like NBC, they're in front of those very people. Chuck Todd not being prepared to give a proper interview and to give proper pushback against questions that we know the president was clearly winging it on. Because that didn't happen. Now, there exist in our country some people that saw that little sliver of Trump, turned off their television and goes, well, that was my president telling the truth on NBC. Yeehaw, and pass the ammo. Which, that actually happened in Oregon. A bunch of militia groups threatened the government and shut them down on Saturday. This is our country. And it's looking weirder and weirder every day. Well, with this weirdness, though, getting back to the whole scenario of Donald Trump and, well, where he's going to be going in 2020, he's going to try to put himself in as front of as many screens as possible. There might even be a dreaded interview on CNN if his numbers get bad enough. Looking at some of the things that he says in this interview, you can kind of see, one, there was a lot of times that he was making up the answer, but two, because he was allowed such freedom to make all of these false accusations and stuff in front of Todd and the NBC audience, because that was something that he was allowed to do, it also kind of messed with his confidence level a little bit, and he probably got a little too confident and accidentally said the thing that we're not supposed to say out loud. And in that interview, the one thing that the president resoundingly said was that he hates losing. It's the whole reason that he kept a push behind the actual numbers of the 2016 election. Oh, I actually won that popular vote by 3 million illegal votes going to Hillary. Take those away. Trump is your man. He believes that, but is also still playing that whole game of, look how popular I am. Everybody loves me. What do you mean nobody loves me? So when he was talking to Chuck Todd about the upcoming elections, he says, look, I don't like losing. I don't think I could take a 2020 loss. Okay, scary moment here. You know, the president has a warped sense of humor, right? He's talked right now about 10 times in public record about how he should have a longer presidential term to make up for all of the BS that the Democrats have put him through for the first 2 years. And now he's got guys like Rush Limbaugh and Mark Levin and all the conservatives basically parodying that, saying, give our president more time. You robbed him of time. Okay. That's their play. And you think it's all fun and games, right? It's just a cutesy little joke. Oh, you guys know that we put in presidential limits after FDR. Because, oh my God, FDR served 4 times, and that is a little crazy. When the founding father said, two terms is enough, I'm out. That pretty much should have been the precedent that every president stuck with from then on. But we actually had to make an amendment to enact that. Now, when it comes to Donald Trump, he spends a lot of time joking about the fact that he should have an extra term or 2 years extra in this term to make up for what he feels is a political attack witch hunt scheme. It seems like a joke, but then now he's on Chuck Todd's little interview circle-orama saying that he is going to very much not accept failure. You know, Saddam Hussein had the same fears and aspirations. Didn't like failure, always liked winning. Thinks that he should deserve more time as president. And you're probably thinking, if you're one of the guys on the right, oh my God, here goes another lefty crazy talking about how the president is just going to turn into a dictator all of a sudden in 2020 should he be reelected. No, I'm saying that he's that now. We just haven't given him enough power to realize his dictator ambition. There's no use in fighting what we all see right in front of us. This is a guy that he jokes about it because he wants to normalize it. And when he normalizes it, just like he did with Billy Bush. Remember the quote, when you're a celebrity, they let you do anything, anything. He's trying to normalize bad behavior. Hey, you know what? That old Constitution thing's a laugh, isn't it? Ha 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 ha. I think I'm going to hang around in the office even though I lost the popular vote. Isn't that how every other country sunk down into tyranny and totalitarianism, authoritarianism, dictatorship? Anybody? Am I the only one that read these history books? You're probably thinking, well, you're taking it too serious. Am I? Trump may be a lot of things, but he is consistent in announcing his wants. Just ask Stormy Daniels. I mean, Jesus, how many? Never mind. Back to the serious stuff. Making jokes about the president and porn actresses is the easy out, Shaggy, and I know this is a mentally tough challenge. But we can get through this, buddy. 1, 2, 3, let's go. Okay, sometimes I have to give myself a pep talk. The amount of mental acrobatics that you have to do, whereas the actions out of Donald Trump versus the effect that he wants it to have are never in the same universe with each other, but somehow you're supposed to say, yep, that's how the president intended it, and that's how it's going to work in the end, a la Kellyanne Conway. But wrapping up this story, there's one thing that we all have to consider. In this country, are we going to uphold what we believe in, the Constitution, or are we going to let a small minority of a cult of personality change it just because some guy thinks that he can make jokes on Twitter, on a social media network, and that somehow determines public policy? It's thick, it's twisted, it's our government. One last story before we get out of here. Actually, I might try to squeeze in two. First off, look, it looks like Kellyanne Conway is not heading to the House, but I don't know how to say this. That wasn't even on my roster this week for news because I knew it was going to happen. Donald Trump has been engaging in escalations of his obstructionism. Now, the White House is blocking Kellyanne Conway from testifying about some allegations from a government watchdog group that she's been violating the Hatch Act. Of course she's been violating the Hatch Act, even saying, I will stop doing this when there's a prison sentence attached to it. Yeah, she's not that bright. Because the Hatch Act, even though it's not able to be something prosecuted in a felonious manner, you know, in other words, putting her into jail for actual violation of the Hatch Act, if she used her violation of the Hatch Act, like in the case of Ivanka Trump's personal clothing line, if she used it to create some sort of personal profit from it, that is a crime. Just talking about other politicians and slander, that's the Hatch Act, and it's something that can be dealt with, I guess, by the president. Remember, how the president actually controls if the violation of the Hatch Act is recognized. Yeah. Good luck with that. But White House lawyers on Monday had basically talked to the House Oversight Committee and said that their request for Conway for the hearing for Wednesday might not go on. They said, basically, quote, "In acceptance with long-standing precedent, we respectfully decline the invitation to make Ms. Conway available for testimony before your committee." Because now, obstructionism is so mechanical in the Trump White House that we can just send a freaking email, and that'll just cover the whole trick. Now, legal scholars will tell you, is there any way that resisting the subpoena could actually come back as a bad thing? The answer is yes, but it takes a really long time, and there's a long, lengthy process that involves courts and testimonies and all kinds of stuff to get there. Just going through the House subpoena method, if the House can hold you in contempt, well, they can impose their own fines or anything like that. If it has to go to some sort of felony level infraction, they have to send that over to the Department of Justice. It's complicated, but it's an actual established system that's worked for years and years and years and years. Donald Trump, though, says, hey, look, you know what? I'm just going to skip it. Don't even start the system. If it's a request, if it's a subpoena from the House to testify, I'm just going to say, you're bullying me. This is presidential harassment. Leave me alone. Neener, neener, neener. And I'm just going to hope that people go away. Now, we've seen, especially when it comes to Representative Cummins, they don't forget. Elijah does not forget. And he's been pounding consistently at the door of the White House going, you will give me my answers through testimony or through subpoena or through court. You will give me my answer. Almost sounds like a Game of Thrones speech there, doesn't it? You will give me my answers! But that's also been true of Nadler and the other, I think, somewhat dozen investigation committees now looking into the White House affairs. The White House is under pressure to show a strong front against their political enemies to Donald Trump's base, who, keeping in mind, are not the entirety of the Republican Party. There's a lot of Republicans that are Republicans that are basically playing not my president with this one and saying, should we have the choice of a Donald Trump in 2020, let's just say pass. Because Trump and Trump's MAGA policies and his Keep America Great thing that he's trying to do, this is all sounding a little bit too a la Third Reich-y brainwashy. And a lot of Republicans are jumping off of that GOP train just to sit by in the independent station. They're not going Democrat. Just because they don't like the option that they're given. Donald Trump has turned off his own party against him. So when we talk about the people that Trump wants to big up, give bigly respect to, it's not the entirety of the GOP. It's just his very small and shrinking base. And to them, they like it when somebody like Kellyanne Conway stands up and says, show me the prison sentence for what I'm doing. They like the kind of mafioso, square up your shoulders, stick out your chest, we're marching into the room mentality. It is almost stickly empowering to the people in the lowest common denominator of Trump's base when they see acts of defiance like this. But versus being just a regular old act of defiance, this isn't. This is way more than that. This is a violation of the system of government that we have had in place since we became a country. Not using your political office for political gain used to be an informal kind of a rule before the Hatch Act came around. I think it was the Teapot Dome scandal. The But before the Hatch Act itself, it was public policy, or at least a gentlemanly agreement, because there was only men in government, get it? A gentleman's agreement that they would not slander or produce any libelous statement after that whole terrible thing happened between Thomas Jefferson and Alexander Hamilton and John Adams. We weren't going to let that happen again, so we'll just make a gentleman's agreement. We won't engage in that behavior. Of course, then a guy did, and we named the act the Hatch Act, pretty much because, yeah, go figure. To make sure that it was at least codified that this was considered bad behavior. But Kellyanne, she just says, show me the prison sentence. Will her testifying, or will she actually testify tomorrow? I'm going to say no, but will she eventually be heard according to everybody in the House? Everybody will eventually be seated and asked to give their testimony. It can either happen in the House or it can happen in the court. Whoa. All right, last thing I'm going to end on is a kind of a weird hopeful note and also kind of a weird, maybe a misogyny note here about Bernie Sanders. I know that Bernie Sanders is the go-to underdog candidate for Democrats. That is the one that it was like, oh, imagine how much better life would have been with Bernie Sanders in 2016 without all that game rigging by Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the superdelegates and our primary versus caucuses system, which, by the way, Bernie has done a lot since 2016 to clean up that whole mess and has actually succeeded on several fronts. But this is the misogyny part. Bernie Sanders came out with a plan to forgive student debt. Hey, that's a kind of a cool thing. He wants to forgive student debt at the rate of $1.4 trillion, and he wants to do that by initializing a new Wall Street tax on speculation. I don't have enough time to explain all of that stuff. Let's just say that he wanted to tax Wall Street because he thought Wall Street needs to pay back America because America bailed out Wall Street about 10 years ago. Vis-a-vis, que sera, sera, pay me, is what he's saying. But the more analysts have looked into this plan, they're kind of looking at the numbers and going, I don't know if there's a feasibility, and I mean this in a financial way, of Bernie Sanders' amazing plan, don't get me wrong, amazing plan to forgive student debt. I just don't think that there is a financial way for that to happen within that plan. But one of the reasons that he released this very ambitious plan, ready? Elizabeth Warren has been surging in the polls as of lately. One of the reasons why is because she seems to have a plan for everything, including student debt. Now, hers differs from Bernie Sanders in, well, there's qualifications, qualifiers, and things like that that are completely different. But long story short, did Bernie Sanders release his student debt forgiveness thing specifically to boost his campaign numbers? Or specifically because Elizabeth Warren was catching up to him? Both are correct. We'll see you on the next show. Till then, love you, mean it.